ಮಾಧವ ಕುಂಜ ಬಿಹಾರಿ ಜಯ ಮಾಧವ ಕುಂಜ ಬಿಹಾರಿ ಗೋಪೀಚನ ಬಾಲವ ಹಿರೇ ವರದಾರಿ ಯಾಸೋರೆ ನಂದನ ಪ್ರಚಜನ ದಂಜನ ವ್ಯಾಸೋಜನಂದನ ವ್ರಜ ಜನರಂಜನ ರಾಮನ ಚೀರಾಪನಚಾರಿ ರಾಮನ ಚೀರಾಪನಚಾರಿ ರಾಧಾ ಮಾಧವ ಕುಂಜ ಬಿಹಾರಿ ಜಯ ರಾಧಾ ಮಾಧವ ಕುಂಜ ಬಿಹಾರಿ ಗೋಪೀಚನ ಬಾಲವ ಹಿರೆ ವರದಾರಿ ಗೋಪೀಚನ ಬಾಲವ ಹಿರೆ ವರದಾರಿ ವ್ಯಾಸೋರ ನಂದನ ವ್ರಜ ಜನರಂಜನ ವ್ಯಾಸೋರ ನಂದನ ವ್ರಜ ಜನರಂಜನ ಯಾಮುನ ಚೀರಾಪನಚಾರಿ ರಾಮನ ಚೀರಾಪನಚಾರಿ ಜಯ ರಾಧಾ ಮಾಧವ ಕುಂಜ ಬಿಹಾರಿ ಜಯ ರಾಧಾ ಮಾಧವ ಬಿಹಾರಿ ಜಯ ಗೋಪೀಜನ ಬಾಲವ ಹಿರೆ ವರದಾರಿ ಯಾಸೋರ ನಂದನ ವ್ರಜ ಜನರಂಜನ ಅಸೋರ ನಂದನ ಬ್ರಜ ಜನರಂಜನ ಜಾಮುನ ಚೀರಾಪನಚಾರಿ ಜಾಮುನ ಚೀರಾಪನಚಾರಿ ಜಯ ರಾಧಾ ಮಾಧವ Sayarada Madhava Kunda Vihari. Now Vishnupad Paramahansa Pariba Digitario Shatara Satasvi Srimad, His Divine Grace Iskand, Founder of Acharya. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. This morning we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 18, entitled The Residents of Jambudvipa Offer Prayers. Today's text is number 13. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Harir
hi
sakshad
Bhagavan
saririnam atma jashanam
eva
toyam ipshitam hitva mahams tam yadi sajate grihe tada Mahadvam Vayasa Dampatinam Hadirhi Sakshad
Bhagavan Saririnam
Atma Jahasanam Ivaitoyam Ipisitam Hitva mahamstam yadi sajate grihe. Tata mahatvam vayasa dampatinam. Hadir hi sakshad
bhagavan
saririnam. Atma jasanam eva toyam ipsitam. Hitva mahamstam yadi sajate grihe. Tada mahatvam vayasa dampatinam. The Lord. He certainly. Sakshat directly. Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sadirinam, of all living entities who have accepted material bodies. Atma, the life and soul. Jasanam, of the aquatics. Eva, like. Toyam, the vast water. Ipsitam, is desired. Hitva, giving up. Mahan, a great personality. Tam, him. Yadi, if. Sajate, becomes attached. Grihe, to household life. Tada, at that time. Mahatvam, greatness. Vayasa, by age. Dampatinam, of the husband and wife. Translation. Just as aquatics always desire to remain in the vast mass of water, all conditioned living entities naturally desire to remain in the vast existence of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, someone very great by material calculations fails to take shelter of the Supreme Soul, but instead becomes attached to material household life. His greatness is like that of a young, low-class couple. One who is too attached to material life loses all good spiritual qualities. Purport. Although crocodiles are very fierce animals, They are powerless when they venture out of the water onto the land. When they are out of the water, they cannot exhibit their original power. Similarly, the all-pervading Supersoul, Paramatma, is the source of all living entities, and all living entities are part and parcel of Him. When the living entity remains in contact with the all-pervading Vasudeva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, He manifests His spiritual power, exactly as the crocodile exhibits its strength in the water. In other words, the greatness of the living entity can be perceived when he is in the spiritual world, engaged in spiritual activities. Many householders, although well-educated in the knowledge of the Vedas, become attached to family life. They are compared herein to crocodiles out of water, for they are devoid of all spiritual strength. Their greatness is like that of a young husband and wife, who, though uneducated, praise one another and become attracted to their own temporary beauty. This kind of greatness is appreciated only by low-class men with no qualifications. Everyone should therefore seek the shelter of the Supreme Soul, the source of all living entities. No one should waste his time in the so-called happiness of materialistic household life. In the Vedic civilization, this type of crippled life is allowed only until one's 50th year, when one must give up family life and enter into either the order of Vanaprastha, independent retired life for cultivation of spiritual knowledge, or sannyas, the renounced order, in which one takes complete shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Om Agyan Timurandasya Girangina Shilakaya Chaksuma Militam Jenatasmai Sigurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupakadamayam Dadanti Svapalanantikam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaur Bhaktivindam Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Nama Hare Nama 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 Hare In his purport, Srila Prabhupada states that the greatness of the living entity can be perceived when he is in the spiritual world engaged in spiritual activities. As we've many times stated, Jivar Surup Koya Krishnara Nityadas, that the eternal nature of the living entity is that he is the eternal servant of God. And if one is situated in his eternal relationship as servant with the Supreme Lord, his real glory comes out. But if the servant leaves the master, then he can only become a beggar. His opulence, his fortune, all his good fortune is there because he is serving his master. One time Srila Prabhupada was walking on the beach in Bombay, and there were different dogs running on the beach, and there were other dogs who were attached to a leash to their master. So Prabhupada pointed out to the devotees, "You see the difference between these two dogs?" He said, "Those fat, fluffy dogs, they're like that because they have a master who maintains them and takes care of them. And those who have no master, or those who run away from their master, they're very skinny and weak because they have to survive on their own." So in the same way, the living entity, when he's connected to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he possesses all good qualities. But as soon as he leaves the association of the Supreme Lord who's maintaining him, then he becomes bereft of all good qualities, having to struggle on his own. So our real glory, our wonderful qualities as living entities, are there in relationship to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Just like the other day, we went for a drive, and we were down by Mission Bay, looking at the Rathyatra site, and there was a beautiful tree there. I think it was a peach tree, and it's spring now. So it was very beautiful because the flowers were in full bloom. So I asked Bhava Prabhu, these flowers, it would be so nice for Lord Nrsingadev. Could you pick some of those flowers so I can give them to the Lord? So he picked those nice flowers, and we put them in the car. And about halfway back, I thought, I can't offer these to Lord Nrsingadev. They're all wilted. So they were beautiful. In relationship to the source of their beauty, which was that tree, Actually, the flower was very nice, but it was getting its life from the main trunk of the tree. And as soon as you picked that flower, it began to die, began to wither and die away. So in the same way, we are part and parcel of Krishna, and our eternal constitutional position is that of servant. To be a servant is our natural situation, and it's a very glorious situation, actually. To be the servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is very glorious. But when we foolishly give up that service, then we simply become insignificant beggars. We are insignificant, but we're glorious if we're related to the Supreme Lord. Just like this is a very nice harmonium, well, a sort of nice harmonium, and it has the very different parts. So all these parts are essential to the proper functioning of the harmonium. So this screw here is very important. Now if that screw falls out on the ground and goes someplace else and somebody walks out, what is this insignificant? It's insignificant, it's just a screw. So just throw it away. But it's seen insignificant because it's not in relationship to its position as part of this harmony. But you put it back in the heart, it's very much appreciated. So the living entity is appreciated in his service to God. And as soon as he leaves the service of God, he becomes ugly. Like the thumb. The thumb is a very important part of the body. Actually, we don't realize how much we use our thumb. In the British days, when the British were ruling India, Indians, they wanted Swaraj, they wanted independence from the British. So in order to declare their independence, they wanted to become self-sufficient. So they began, Gandhi, he began making their own cloth. Instead of selling their wool to the British, and then the British would take it back to London, they would make nice clothes, and they would then send it back to India and sell it at a very high price to the Indians. It was very much in fashion to wear something made in London. So in this way, they were cheating the people. They were taking their own product, taking it back to London, sending it back and selling it for a very high price. So Gandhi said, we don't want any cooperation with the British. So he started a spinning mill. And these spinning mills, the people began making their own clothes. We're not going to cooperate with the British. We're going to make our own clothes. So they were spinning and spinning, and this agitated the British. They were losing a lot of business. So what did the British do? They went around to all the people who were working the mills, and they cut off their thumbs. It's very simple to spin yarn, wool, cotton like this, but if you lose the thumb, it's very difficult, very hard to do. So they cut off the thumb. So the thumb is very important in relationship to the hand. But as soon as you cut that thumb off and you put it on the ground, it becomes a disgusting thing. Ugh. Pick it up, throw it away. Ooh. If you see someone's thumb, I remember once in school we were working wood shop, and there was that zzz, that buzz saw. So, we're making our little models and boats and things, and the guy next to me, whoop, he lost his finger. He was one of the football stars or something, he had a good hand. It was really important. But then when he lost that finger, fortunately they picked that finger up and took him to the hospital. They sewed it back on. The only thing he couldn't do was play the violin or something after that. He didn't have all the tendons working. But everyone appreciated the good hand of that boy, with his finger. His finger was the golden finger, you might say, the golden thumb. But, once you separate it from that which makes it significant, the whole, the body, then it became ugly. So in the same way, the living entity is glorious in his relationship with the Supreme Lord as servant of the Supreme Lord. And if you separate the living entity from God, then he becomes ugly. That same beautiful thing cut off from the source becomes unattractive, becomes ugly. But if you can rejoin it, just like the doctors rejoin that boy's finger, if you can again rejoin the finger to the body, you can somehow rejoin the flower to the tree, or you can rejoin the living entity to God through the constitutional position of devotional service. You'll again see those good qualities come out. As we had the verse yesterday, yasyasti bhaktir bhavati akinchana savarganastata samasate shura. The one who is a devotee of the Lord, he naturally develops all good qualities. But those who are not devotees of the Lord, they possess no good qualities because they're hovering on the mental platform and are sure to be attracted by the glaring material energy. So again, we are the marginal potency of the Lord, and we take on the qualities of that with which we associate. So the spiritual world is all auspicious, and this material world is inauspicious. So if we associate, then we take on the bad qualities. Again, it's all a question of association. So if we can again link up to the Supreme Lord through service, we'll see automatically, practically. We were speaking of 26 qualities yesterday, but the process is so nice that we don't have to develop necessarily each quality individually. But just by being a devotee, those qualities become manifest in one's personality. We just simply have to concentrate on Krishna consciousness, process of devotional service. To serve is natural. It's natural to serve. That is our constitutional position. People say, serve God? Many times you give a lecture. Our position as servants of God, ugh, I don't want to serve God. In France they have that saying, ni maître ni Dieu, no master, no God. They don't want to serve anyone. But still they have to serve. They're still serving. They're serving country. They're serving family. They're serving society. Prabhupada said sometimes if someone doesn't have a personal relationship of service, then they'll get a cat or a dog or a bird. That relationship, it's needed. It's there. You can never separate that from the living entity. That's the intrinsic nature, the dharma of the living entity. Just like sugar's always sweet, salt's always salty. So the nature of the soul is always to serve. And if we're not serving God, then we will serve something else. As the Christians say, we will serve mammon. We will serve matter. But serve you must. And that taste that one gets from his service, that's called rasa. So that is incomplete in the material world. We try to serve separate from God, society, friendship, and love. The taste is not coming. We remain unfulfilled. But as soon as we take up devotional service to the Lord, through the nine processes of devotional service, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Shmaranam, Parasevanam, Archanam, etc., immediately we feel fulfilled. Just like a man, he is taking a meal and he's perceiving how he's becoming satisfied. So similarly, once one takes up the process of devotional service, he will immediately experience how he is becoming satisfied because he's again connected to the source. You cut him off from the source, the nutrition is lost. But you again reconnect, then life is coming back to the living entity. It appears there's life, but actually it's not real life, this material existence, because we are attached to matter. Just like recently in France, one devotee's father, he had an operation. What do they call it? Triple bypass operation. So we went to see him in the hospital, and he was telling me this amazing story. How when they operate on the body, they cut open the chest and they open up the rib cage like this, and they actually take the heart some distance out of the body. And they work on it. But because the heart is no longer pumping blood, that essential function of pumping blood and oxygen to the body was technically considered dead because there's no source. So what they do is they hook the body up to a life support system. And all the blood goes through a machine. The machine is pumping the blood through your body. And there's another machine they have on your lungs. And if necessary, they have a kidney machine to keep the kidneys going. So they have all these machines, you know, hooked up to the body, performing the functions that these organs do to keep life going in the body. But in one sense, it's artificial, isn't it? Because the heart is the actual thing that is pumping the body. But they make an artificial situation, and during the operation, you know, it looks like the person is actually functioning and living, but it's all artificial. It's not the real system of life. It's an artificial system of support. So in the same way, this material existence, the life that people are experiencing, actually it's not real life. Real life is devotional service. Spiritual life, that is devotional service. And what they are doing, because they are hovering on the mental platform and are surely attracted to the material energy, actually it's like dead man walking. Because what is their source of inspiration? It is simply matter, and matter is by nature inert. It is dead. But spirit is life. Spirit is soul is actually living. So the real life is the life of Krishna consciousness. When we're acting on the spiritual platform, that is actual life. Therefore, we see devotees are effulgent, and they're full of energy. When a devotee engages in devotional service, he's full of transcendental energy. And all his good qualities become manifest by, again, connecting himself to the original source, which is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this verse is giving a strict warning that if one can remain in the association of the Lord through the process of devotional service, one will exhibit one's original power. One will be strong. But outside of the association of the Lord, one becomes defeated, weakened by the all-powerful material energy. And Prabhupada gives the example of the crocodile. The crocodile is a very powerful animal when he's in the water. He has this big tail, we have seen. He can just go with his tail right to the water. He'll even eat you if you stay too long. So he's very powerful. But when he comes onto the land, it's very awkward for him, because he has little stubby legs. And what is the use of a big long tail on the land? It just gets in the way. You have to drag it. It doesn't help you. It's like a propeller in the water. But on the land, it's a very awkward situation. So he can't fight on the land. If an elephant, there's that story, of course, of Gajendra. I think it's the eighth canto, Gajendra the elephant. And Gajendra is very... elephant is very powerful. They say the lion is the king of the jungle, but actually elephants can defeat lions. Elephant is such a powerful beast. But you put the elephant, that big fat elephant, in the water, and that's where he becomes incompetent. He can't do anything in the water. So that crocodile can attack the elephant in the water. So in the purports to that pastime, Prabhupada said the devotee must learn the art of situating himself in such a way that he always remains strong in Krishna consciousness. Just like in the spiritual world, Prabhupada says one has all good qualities and one exhibits his original power. One cannot be defeated by the material energy when one is in the spiritual world, because one is powerful. The full glory of the soul is manifested. But as soon as one comes into the material world, this is an awkward situation. It's like the elephant in water or the crocodile on land. And that powerful living entity can be defeated. So although we are spirit soul, part and parcel of Krishna, we possess all the divine qualities of the Lord in a minute form. Still, being the marginal potency of the Lord, we can be overcome by the material energy. We can be overcome by the material energy. But just like as we are in the spiritual world, protected, so in the same way, if we act in the same consciousness in this material world through the process of devotional service, we can remain protected. We have to find that situation. Prabhupada said for some it may be brahmachari, for some it may be grihastha, for others it may be sannyas. But wherever one feels strong, wherever one gets spiritual strength, then one should situate himself in that particular service, that varna, that ashram, where one can perform devotional service and not be agitated by the modes of material nature. So there is great strength to be had in the process of devotional service, although we find ourselves in this material world, and it is very powerful, this material energy. Daivyesha gunamayi mama maya duratyaya mameva ye papanyante mayamitam tarantite. Krishna states in Bhagavad Gita, this divine energy of mine, consisting of the three modes of material nature, is very difficult to overcome. But those who have surrendered unto me can easily overcome it. This is maximum security. Just like if you're an especially bad criminal, they put you in maximum security. Sometimes there's minimum security. If you're not, so they don't worry about you. But if you're a rapist or a mother stabber or a father strangler, if you're a particularly nasty person, they don't want you to get out. They don't want you out, so they put you in maximum security. It's like they've got seven walls around the prison, you've got a moat full of crocodiles, you've got electric fence, you've got to go through poisonous gas, there's guards up there. And it doesn't matter who, you know, you can be the best criminal, but you can't get out. And maybe, you know, there's instances where people have got out even of maximum security. But there's no way you're going to get out of the maximum security of Durga's kingdom, Maya's kingdom, This is Maya's kingdom, and she's the prison, thankless task of the prison keeper in this material world. So it's very difficult to get out of this material existence. Just as the prison has four walls, similarly, there's birth, death, old age, and disease, maximum security. Very difficult to get out. But Krishna says, Mameva ye papadyante mayamitam terantite. But those who are surrendered unto me, they can easily cross beyond it. So what is the surrendering process? The surrendering process is devotional service. So if we want to overcome this awkward position of being a spirit soul weakened by in this materialistic existence, being defeated and humiliated, the glorious spirit soul who exists in his full glory in the spiritual world has now become a pig or a dog. The living entity who's in one way or another is enjoying his glorious situation in the spiritual world, he's now attracted to the stool. Not very palatable, but in India you see the stool fields. Actually, we think maybe a toilet is a more civilized way. But actually, Vedic culture was perfect. People would go to the fields. It was very clean. Some far away, it was very clean. The sun would dry everything. The sewage system is something else which has been introduced, but anyway. So there I saw when we did the parikramas in the early morning, people would be out in the fields answering nature's call, and there would be a whole army of hogs. You know, sometimes they were so eager that they would knock the people over. So it's humorous, but in one sense, it's like Krishna when he was laughing at Arjuna. You know, Arjuna was just so despondent. You know, what am I going to do, my Lord? You know, now I'm a soul surrendered unto you. So the verse begins, the Lord, gently smiling, began to instruct Arjuna. Because it is a little funny, isn't it, these pigs. But think about it, that pig or that hog was originally in his glory in the spiritual world. And somehow, by the powerful material energy, he's convinced that chasing after these stools, that's his breakfast. That's what he wants. That's very nice. So we're humiliated. We're defeated. All our good qualities are taken away by this material energy. It's a very embarrassing thing. Just like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he said, this materialistic way of life makes one look more foolish than an ass. Even if, as this verse mentions, if one becomes very great by material calculations, but he fails to take shelter of the Supreme Lord, but instead becomes attached to household life, his greatness is like that of a young, low-class couple. Becoming too attached to material life, he loses all good qualities. So a great materialistic person, his greatness is only momentary, because he will be defeated by this material energy. Old age and sickness are very humiliating things for a materialistic person, because they pride themselves in their beauty and their strength and their education. But as you get older, what happens? That beautiful, pretty little face, you know, with the sweet pearl teeth and the ruby-like eyes and the soft, smooth skin, you know, it slowly, slowly starts. And then pretty soon you look like a prune. It's humiliating. It's very embarrassing. It's very embarrassing. The karmis have a few short years of so-called glory, from 16 to 21 or something like that. I think they say at 24 years age, up to 24, the body is developing, building the yovanam, the freshness of youth. It's going like, but around 24, then it starts to deteriorate. By the time you hit 40, you've got that, you know, extra tire on the side. You got a few lines under here, and the teeth are turning yellow, and you know, suddenly you can't digest the same Sunday feast that you used to, and the hairs start turning gray, and you know, if you're on the bodily platform, you're going to get discouraged. But if you're a devotee, you're saying, "Great, getting closer to Krishna." You know, these powerful senses are becoming weakened. They're not going to demand so much anymore. And I can get down to my real business of practicing Krishna consciousness. So everything is reversed. Old age and disease, these things don't bother devotees. They're transcendental because they have spiritual knowledge. But just see the materialistic person. Because he's so much attached to the bodily concept of life. He may be a very great person by material calculations, but those very qualities that make him great will humiliate him. humiliate him. I remember Johnny Weissmuller. Johnny Weissmuller was a star swimmer in America on the Olympic teams. He was the one that, he's the original one in the Tarzan movies. I wish I could use more spiritual examples, but brings it home, you know. So Johnny Weissmuller is, you know, big, strong body, and everyone, he's in the movies and Tarzan, so forth. And, you know, he was enjoying so much fame and honor, but that same body, which was the source of his fame and his prestige and his pride, became the source of his anxiety. That very thing which, you know, he thought was so wonderful humiliated him. And it was described that he actually went insane later on, because he got older and he became flabby and fat. He had a lot of money, he was eating junk food and everything. So he was no longer attractive like that. So then he just became so frustrated that, you know, he went a little mad. And Elvis Presley, the same thing. You know, he was a very famous, and then he became fat and ugly. He couldn't sing anymore, so he killed himself. Overdose. So the material, this is, we should never put our faith in this material energy. Prabhupada said, material life means you put your head on my lap and I cut your throat. So we should see the material world for what it is. We respect her, oh Mother Durga. You're the powerful agent of the Supreme Lord, but I want to be Krishna's servant, because if I serve you, you are merciless master. You promised me so many things, but in the end, you cut my throat. You promised me name, fame, good fortune, etc., and you give it to me for a while, but then those very things, they turn sour. Just like if you leave the sweet rice is very relishable, but if you leave it out in the hot sun in the month of January, and you come the next day and you drink it, you're going to get a, remember? Sometimes we've had that experience. I don't know if ever here we, the Sunday feast. You know, somebody made the sweet rice on Friday, and they served it, had a little tingle to it, right? And then Monday morning, nobody comes to Mongol Arctic. Everyone's, you know, running to the restroom. So it turns sour. So material life is like that. It has both sides. Like in the theater of life is represented by the happy face and the sad face. I think that's tradition, at least in the Opéra à Paris, in Paris at the Opéra. We used to distribute there. I always used to look up. It'd be this smiling face and this sad face. And one day I had the realization, this is material life. You can't have one without the other. If you have that smiling face, it's going to eventually turn into a sad face. Happiness and distress, heat and cold, good and bad, this is a duality of materialistic life. So if we accept that so-called happiness of material existence, then we have to understand that in due course of time, we're going to get equal amount of distress. Equal amount. If you get this much sense gratification, okay, then you're going to get that much distress. But if you invest and you think, oh, I'm very successful now, I have this big, big house and I made it. But you also have big, big anxiety, sir. Because you have a big, attractive house, and many people would like to have that house. You are enjoying that house, but there's so many people who are envious of you, and they want to come into your house and to steal all your things. We were speaking of South Africa the other day. 2 out of 5 houses are burglared in South Africa. 2 out of 5. You do a program at someone's house. So, you know, has your house been? Oh, yes, 3 times our house has been burglared. So it's something, very success, very nice, but you have to board it up, you have to lock it, you have to keep a dog outside, you have to build a fence. So in one sense, it's a source of great happiness for you. But in another sense, it's also equal amount of weight of distress. I think Angira Muni gave that benediction to that king. Yes, you can have a child. He will be the source of your happiness and your distress as well. So the prince was born. A young, attractive prince, he was born. And he was the life and soul of the king and the queen. But then out of envy, the other queens, the other queens, they poisoned the child. And then that child became a source of great anxiety and distress for the king. So this is, if the material energy is used in that way for one's personal sense gratification, it has this effect. But of course, a devotee sees the material energy. He sees the material as the property of Krishna, so it doesn't have the same effect. That same thing, which was causing the disease, when used in a therapeutic way, cures the disease. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said, I would have a sex life 1,000 times if I could guarantee that those children would be Krishna conscious. So on one hand, the entanglement of the materialistic person is the source of his distress, his so-called attempt to enjoy. Pumsha studyami tuni bhavam tayarmito hidaya granti maho aho gekshetu sataptu vitar janasi maho yamahamameti. The attraction between male and female is a basic principle of material existence based on this misconception which ties together the hearts of the male and the female. One becomes attached to his body, to his home, to his wife, to his children, to his household prayer. In this way, one increases life's illusions and thinks in terms of I and mine. But the same principle used in Krishna's service liberates. Bhaktivinoda Thakur had a big family. I think he had, 10 or 15 children or something. And they were all engaged. Wife was engaged. Sons were engaged. Lalita Prasad, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. He said, one day I looked out and saw my house transformed into Vaikuntha. So real renunciation, the Mayavadis also see this source of distress in this material world. But real renunciation doesn't mean to simply give it up, because it never belonged to you anyway, how you can give it up. Real renunciation means to see, this is not for my pleasure, this is for Krishna's pleasure. So if you use that material energy in Krishna's service, that which was causing you the anxiety and the distress will be the very source of your liberation. The very source of liberation. But we must be intelligent to see how the material world is binding the living entity, and how, although one becomes very great by the materialistic point of view, in due course of time, he'll be defeated. He will be defeated. I think old age is a very humiliating thing. That in old age, one can simply remember what it was like in the old days. That's all. If the body is old, it's useless. The mind is not working. It's very embarrassing. But actually, because a devotee utilizes his life properly, he doesn't exploit this body, and he uses the senses properly. Actually, his glorious time is old age. Nowadays, people put the old people away in rest homes because they're all senile. They become like children again, babbling, blah, 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 old people. But a devotee, because he hasn't abused the principle of this body, but he's used this body in Krishna's service, the mind becomes senile, due to too much sex, both gross and subtle sex. The mind becomes, Prabhupada said, the senility is a result of illicit sex life. So we see that those who are brahmacharis, or those who observe the principles, brahmachari grihastra, sex life only for the propagation of children, then the semen goes upwards. The semen has two purposes. The basic purpose of the semen is to give strength to the brain. Yogis, through the kundalini process, they would raise the semina up to the, just like milk. Milk has that propensity to give finer brain cells so one can think of philosophy. So the semen in the body also has that purpose. One of the four or five essential elements, the blood, etc., of the body, the semen, and it's meant to go upwards, not downwards. Upwards means that it gives strength to the mind to understand philosophy. Therefore, nashtiki brahmacharis, very often they're trigalikyan. They can remember? Shrutidhara. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, nashtiki brahmachari. From birth, never had a relationship with a woman. He could remember any passage of any book he'd read in his entire life. Actually, when he was 7 years old, he memorized the whole Bhagavad Gita, every single verse. We're still struggling. Dehi no smin yata de he kama kom. But 7 years old, the whole Bhagavad Gita. So whatever he read, he learned. You know how he learned English? He was speaking Bengali. He took some encyclopedias and some dictionaries and some technical books, and he locked himself in a room for 5 days, studied those books. He came out speaking fluent, erudite English, better than any British person could speak. He wanted to do that so he could preach. So there's great strength in celibacy. We think, I have to control my senses. But for all the don'ts we're supposed to do, there's a definite reason for it. So if one can become freed from the attraction for the opposite sex, he'll have so much energy. Not only will the semen go to the brain, but also subtle sex life means profit, adoration, and distinction. In order to achieve one's desire to enjoy the opposite sex, one has to build a whole phantasmagoria of profit, adoration, and distinction so that one can attract, just like you see the peacocks here. They're doing the dance, right? The male peacock is doing the dance, you know, so much endeavor. Adoration and distinction. So much effort is there. Simply for this momentary pleasure. And for that momentary pleasure, one has to work so hard his whole life. A few minutes of enjoyment, and then one has to take that risk. Of course, if we take it as a devotee, that's a burden of love, burden of responsibility to raise our children in Krishna consciousness. But if they simply have, ordinary people have children like cats and dogs, there's so much in anxiety. A few moments pleasure, then for 25, 30 years, they have to pay the bills, beginning from the moment of delivery. Until the kid graduates from high school, from the college, you know, you work hard, work hard, work hard. So there's great strength to be had from celibacy. Actually, even Gandhi, although he's not such a glorious person, Prabhupada has many things to say about Gandhi. He did say that Gandhi was actually able to drive the British out of India because of his celibacy. He took a vow of celibacy at one point. And he got great strength, mental power, and determination as a result of that. So, you know, we're not simply practicing these rules and regulations for some, you know, because we want to be good moralists. Of course, that's also important, but it's scientific. Any instruction Krishna gives us, it has a definite purpose. So being detached from illicit connection with women, or for the women, illicit connection with men, is advantageous for our spiritual life because it gives us the opportunity to think of Krishna, to concentrate on Krishna. So senility, the word, is a result of illicit sex. But because devotees don't abuse this principle, they're having children in Krishna consciousness. This is not an abuse, this is actually religious. But because they're controlling their senses, old age is coming, they're in the prime of life. For a materialistic person, the prime of life is when he can enjoy his senses in youth. But for a devotee, the prime of life is his Krishna conscious maturity, his realizations. So therefore in Vedic culture, you know, after 50 years of age, after so much austerities and penance and training and cultivation of devotion, etc., then the duty of the senior man was to travel in society and preach Krishna consciousness. His realizations were there. So this is a wonderful life. They have nothing to look forward to. They're going to become defeated more and more. But the more we practice Krishna consciousness, the more glorious it becomes. It's a life of hope. We have only so much to look forward to. I think I mentioned at the Sunday feast the philosophy of existentialism. You know, realistic but not much knowledge. You know, it's just hopeless, so just kill yourself. The Krishna consciousness means a life of good fortune and hope. It's only going to get better. It's so nice now, isn't it? But it's only going to get better, especially if we're strict. A devotee, understanding this principle, that the sense gratification, the principle of sense gratification is defeating. It may be like nectar in the beginning, but it's poison in the end. So there may be a little poison in the beginning of spiritual life because you have to control our senses, but it's nectar in the end. So seeing things through a philosophical point of view, this is how we should see the world. We should see to the eyes of Śrīla Prabhupāda's purports. Understanding this, a devotee doesn't want to make a compromise. He's been servant of Maya for so many lives. He doesn't want to compromise. So he, understanding this principle that this material energy will defeat us, a devotee doesn't want to surrender to the material energy. So he doesn't have to surrender this to the... you surrender to someone when you're defeated by them. If you defeat the opposite army, they have to surrender to you. But a devotee is not defeated by the material energy because he's protected by the principles of devotional service. There's great strength to be had in the vows that we take at the moment of initiation. No meat eating, no intoxication, no illicit sex, and no gambling. chanting 16 rounds a day and taking up active service with the spiritual master. That is sufficient for protecting you from Daivyeshtu Gunami Mama Maya Dharaya. God says it. Krishna says, very difficult to overcome this illusory energy of mind. Even yogis, jnanis, they cannot do it. They become defeated ultimately. They rise to the Brahman, they fall down. But a devotee, he becomes the real hero. Who's the real hero? The person who can flex his muscles and throw a steel ball halfway across a football field? Who can pick up a rubber pigskin and, you know, run through a bunch of men, get beat up, and touch it on the other side of the line? Is that the hero? No, the real hero is one who can control his mind and control his senses. The real hero is the one who can get out of this maximum security prison. There was that movie, The Great Escape. The Germans captured all the American prisoners and they put them in the... It was like there was no way you could get out of that camp, but it's a glory. It was a big movie, you know, The Great Escape. They tunneled out and they got out. So the heroes. So the real hero is the one who can conquer over the repetition of birth and death. That takes strength. We're not impressed how big a muscles you have. That's not real strength. Real strength means to be able to control the senses. We all know that takes strength, don't we? That when you see that attractive, whatever it is, food or lady or man, that you can control your senses. It's so powerful. So that's real strength. So on the basis of that strength, one can conquer over this material energy. So that's the real hero. So if we're feeling a little weak in devotional service, it might be because we're compromising. Because if we maintain these principles, there's no reason that we should feel weak or lack enthusiasm in devotional service. These are our guardians. So we don't make compromises. If we compromise, we start to give in. As we said the other day, you give an inch, you'll take a mile in material energy. So therefore, devotees are very, very strict. We're very, very strict. And by being strict, we're not the loser. Not that because I'm strict, I'm going to lose out something. By being strict, you're going to gain. Just like Arjuna is a good example of this strictness. He made no compromise. Arjuna, before the battle, Kurukshetra, he went to see his father, Lord Indra, in the heavenly planets. And while he was there, his father wanted to entertain him. So entertainment in the heavenly planets is the society girls, the apsaras. So the most beautiful society girl, her name is Urvasi. We won't go into any more descriptions, but Urvasi is the most attractive society girl. So Indra, thinking that this would be nice for Arjuna, these things are not considered wrong up there. So he said, Urvasi, you go enjoy with Arjuna. Arjuna was a man of great principle, devotional principle, a devotee of the Lord. So Urvasi approached Arjuna in the dead of night in his chamber. And she came in a very attractive way. So she expressed her mind, I want to unite with you. But Arjuna was very strict. He said, you are the property of my father. So you are like mother. My father is my father, so you are his property. So therefore, I can only address you as mother. So I'm sorry, I can't unite with you. So she became very angry. She said, no one has ever said this to me before. I'm the most beautiful society girls. But Arjuna said, Mataji, I'm sorry, but you are my mother. See? A man should see all women as his mother, except his wife. Should see all women as mother. And if we have this mentality, certainly one doesn't have this enjoying, unless one is very degraded. Mother is always mother. So if one addresses, one gets into the habit of addressing all the ladies as Mataji, you know, and understanding what it means, just like we were saying yesterday, Prabhu means master. So Mataji means Mataji, mother. So one has a formal relationship with one's mother. So if you see, this is good practice to do like this. This will protect us. So Arjuna did like that. So there's great strength to be had from following these vows. Actually, we were discussing with some devotees last night that vow, you take a vow, that means you have to sacrifice. No one comes to this movement, a pure devotee. So if you agree to sacrifice that which is dear, money is honey, so sweet it can't be beat. If you agree to sacrifice that which is very dear to the conditioned soul, which is sense gratification, then you become endeared to that person you're sacrificing for. So you take the vow at the moment of initiation, you know, no more sense gratification. Then, oh, this boy is serious, this girl is serious. They're giving up the sense gratification and my instruction, so therefore, let me ask Krishna to give them blessings. So if we can make sacrifice on behalf of Guru and Gauranga, there's great strength to be had. Just like Bhishma Dev. Who knows the other name of Bhishma Dev? Yes? Very good. Thank you. Devarat, the upholder of great vows, the vows, the strength of the demigods. Bhishma Dev's father was Maharaj Shantanu, and Maharaj Shantanu was married to Ganga Devi. But, well, that's a whole other story. Ganga Devi said, anyway. So at one point, Ganga Devi, who was also heavenly Apsara, she left Maharaj Shantanu, so he was without queen. So one day he became attracted to a fisherman's daughter, Satyavati. Became attracted to Satyavati. So he wanted to marry Satyavati. What is a king without a queen? So he wanted to be married to Satyavati. So his son from Gangadevi, Bhishma Dev, the great glorious Bhishma, when he was a young man now, in his young age. So wanting to serve his father, he went to the father of Satyavati, the fisherman, and he said, "My father would like to have your daughter as his queen." So the fisherman, he said, "No way." He said, "Because when she has a son, he will not become king. Because you are, your children, when you marry, they will naturally, because you were first, your children will, your son will naturally become king. So I don't want my daughter to marry and have a second place, have my grandchildren take second place." So Bhishma said, "All right, for the pleasure of my father, I vow to remain brahmachari my entire life." So on the basis of that condition, the fisherman agreed to give his daughter. So for the pleasure of his authority, his father, Bhishma Dev made this great sacrifice, that I vow that I will never marry, that I will be brahmachari my entire life. So at the moment he said that, there was thunderous applause from all the demigods, and they rained down flowers, and they gave him this name, Devarat, because he took this vow for the pleasure of his father. So there's great strength to be had from taking these vows on behalf of spiritual master. And having taken that vow, we will remain strong just on the principle of taking that vow. That vow keeps us, of course, away from sense gratification. We've made the sacrifice of sense gratification for the pleasure of Guru and Gauranga. Therefore, they're pleased and we get mercy. We will remain strong in devotional service if we keep that vow. And one time someone came to Prabhupada, "I can't do it anymore, Prabhupada. I just can't follow all those rules and regulations." And Prabhupada said, "But you promised. You promised." That was all he said, Prabhupada. "But you promised." So we take that vow at the moment of initiation. We take it in front of Radha and Krishna. We take it in front of the spiritual master. We take it in front of the devotees. It's a very serious thing. There's great strength to be had. So if we keep to these regulative principles, even if we just follow the regular principles in chanter 16 rounds, in many letters Prabhupada said, you'll go back to Godhead. So don't underestimate the potency of following these rules and regulations and stick to them. Just like, again, Arjuna. Arjuna, actually the Pandavas were married to Panchali. Panchali means Draupadi. Draupadi, Panchali, she had five husbands, the five Pandavas. Beautiful name, actually, Panchali. So, the five Pandavas, they took a vow that when any one of them was with Draupadi, the others would not disturb. Five husbands, one wife. So in order that each one could have the proper relationship with the wife, they made a vow that if any one of us is with Panchali, the others will not disturb. And if we do, we'll go in exile for some time. So one day, Yudhishthira Maharaj was in the tent with Panchali, with Draupadi. And during that time, one Brahmana, He came up to the camp of the Pandavas in great distress. He said, "There are dacoits, they are stealing my cows. You are the rulers of this land." He said, "Please, you come and protect the cows and the Brahmins." Namo Brahmanya Devaya, Go Brahmanya Hitaya Cha, Jagadhitaya Krishnaya, Govindaya Namo Namo. That is your duty as Kshatriyas, to protect the Brahmins and the cows. So Arjuna took, "Yes, where are my weapons?" "My weapons are in the tent." And Yudhishthira is there with Draupadi. And I have to, he said, "But this is a higher cause," he said, "to protect." So he went in the tent to get his weapons. And immediately Yudhishthira and Draupadi came forward. "Oh, Arjuna, so nice you've come." There was no ill feeling. So he took his weapons and he went. He smashed the culprits. He killed the dacoits. But he didn't compromise. Although Yudhishthira and Panchali had not were not upset by the fact that he came in the tent, he'd taken a vow, so he went into exile for a few months just to keep his vow. He didn't make a compromise. He wasn't thinking, "Oh, give it a little. All right, it was all right one time. It's a big deal, you know." They didn't really care anyway. You know, this is Maya's last trick. He's given me up, so I'll enter into his mind in the form of compromise. This is Maya's last trick. We've taken the vow, but a little compromise there. She's still in your heart. That's her last trick. Compromise. So we shouldn't compromise. We don't have to compromise, because if we don't compromise, we'll be spiritually fit and strong and healthy, and those things won't. So our strength lies in our strictness. And we have, of course, you know, it's the same old lecture, isn't it? No meeting, no intoxication, you know, let's say. We have to hear it again, because we see sometimes we're weak in that way. So we have to tighten up. Actually, all the instructions that we get, we should take. Not that we're accepting some instructions and other instructions, that we'll advance into Krishna consciousness as much as we can absorb every instruction of the spiritual master. Some of them are prominent and some are not so prominent, but they're all essential for our advancement in Krishna consciousness. All of them are essential. Just like Abhimanyu. Today is Mahabharata Day. Abhimanyu was, of course, the son of Arjuna and Subhadra. So, sometimes, just like husband, sometimes he speaks confidentially with wife. You say, "Don't tell this to your wife." "Oh, no, no, I won't tell my wife." "What did he say? What did he say?" "You promise you won't tell anyone?" "Yeah, yeah, I promise, I promise." You know, next day it's all over the whole community. "Well, I just told such and such, Prabhu. I couldn't, I mean, I have to, she's my best friend." So anyway, Arjuna said, so that's natural. The husband is revealing to the wife some confidential. So Arjuna would sometimes discuss with Subhadra, of all people, you know, battle tactics, Kshatriya warfare. He would discuss different types of formations. Actually, the Battle of Kurukshetra, it was very interesting, very glorious way to fight war. They would have different formations, taking the form of swans and peacocks and horses and cows. There was different types of formations, and these formations would fight each other, just like animals sometimes fight. So these different formations would fight, and you have to change the formation according to the formation that's coming before you, etc. So there was one particularly unique formation that Arjuna knew about and Bhishma knew about. So there was a specific way, though, that was a very difficult to penetrate this formation. There was a way to do it, and there's a way to get out of it. So Arjuna was telling this to Subhadra, you know, that you can get into the formation like this and you can get out like this. So who was listening? Abhimanyu. He was in the womb. So he was listening how to get into the formation. But then the last part, Lady Subhadra fell asleep. So because she fell asleep, the child didn't hear how to get out of the formation. Arjuna was explaining, but he didn't hear because his mother went asleep. So some years later, during the Battle of Kurukshetra, Bhishma Dev organized this formation. And Abhimanyu, it was necessary to penetrate this formation. So Abhimanyu, he knew the art of going into this formation, so he went in. But then, because he was asleep and didn't hear all the instructions, he couldn't get out of trouble. And we know the story. But although he was a great warrior on the Pandava army, one of the greatest fighters, he was a young boy, I think, 16? Abhimanyu, 16. But he was, even the Maharadis couldn't defeat him. So he was surrounded by Karna and Bhishma and Ashwatthama and Drona, etc. And altogether, those great generals defeated him. But the point of the story is that, you know, he heard some of the instructions, so he was successful to a certain degree. But because he didn't understand all the instructions, he got into trouble. So in the same way, we must accept all the instructions of the spiritual master and not neglect any of them. Because we will definitely make progress by accepting those prominent instructions. But if we neglect any instruction, because every instruction has its purpose, every instruction is meant for some aspect of getting freed from the material energy and engaging in devotional service. If you read Prabhupada's books, you'll see that there's instruction for every situation in life. Every problem that there is in this material world, there's a solution. Krishna consciousness is the solution to all problems. And Prabhupada is so expert that if you read his books, you'll find weapons for all the problems of material existence. We have to always read like this. So we have to assimilate all these instructions and apply all of them and not compromise on any, because we're definitely making progress. But if we compromise or neglect any instructions, we may find ourselves in a situation of Abhimanyu that we may not be able to get out of the formation. So Prabhupada has given us all the facility for going back to God, and if we're serious about following those instructions, we'll make it, and it won't be very difficult. As we've stated on several occasions, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said, I see no reason that all my disciples cannot go back to God in this very lifetime. So be strict, and don't think you can't. Everyone can be strict. Being strict means that, you know, we'll get the strength to do what is necessary. No compromise. Just like Bhishma, just like Arjuna, and etc. So it's getting a little late. We have a lot of meetings today, building up for the marathon. So thank you very much. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Shri Prabhupada ki, Gaur Premanande.